All right, everyone. How's everyone doing today? This is my first ever kind of podcast slash interview. I don't usually do these, but today I have with me Gregory White. And Greg and I met through the Nourish Balance Thrive Forum. We're both elite performance program members there. And we've gone back and forth on that forum a few times. And then I heard Greg interviewed on the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast and talk a little bit about his health journey. And even though I kind of knew, you know, Greg was a great endurance athlete and someone who's very health conscious, it didn't really occur to me that he would be a perfect person to talk to. Because, you know, but he has an amazing story, background, how he got into athletics. And he's very health conscious and, has leveraged, health coaching and kind of an ancestral athletic point of view to, improve his health along the way. And not only his health, but his performance in marathoning and training overall. So, with that, I'd like to welcome Greg.
Oh, hello.
How you doing, Greg?
Doing well. I had a nice little 7-mile-ish run today and starting to get my, you know, trying to get the base back up to sort of like pre-marathon cycle levels. So feeling the nice, like, you know, as you know, there's lifting and running highs, and the lifting high is more just like tired and kind of like aggro. And so the running high is a very nice, it's always a good day when you have a good long run. You feel very like chilled out and Yeah, so I'm doing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can relate because I raced this past weekend. An obstacle.
What was your race?
It was called Bone Frog. It's like a Navy SEAL inspired obstacle course race. Wow. In Massachusetts on a ski mountain.
Oh, cool.
It was a really cool event. One of the smaller obstacle course race companies, and they but they donate like a portion of your entry fees to go to, you know, help veterans and stuff like that, and have a veteran at the finish line that gives you your medal and you shake his hand and all that stuff.
Wow.
So really cool stuff. But I'm coming off a nice high because I was able to place second in my age group in that race and qualify for North American World OCR Championships.
Wow. It's a whole world that I have no real, I guess I don't know how most things are, like, you know, triathlon or that, but like there really are, like, is that kind of part of the Spartan thing, or is Spartan like to Ironman as triathlon? You know what I mean? Like, it's a brand.
So obstacle course racing is like the sport, and then Spartan and Bone Frog are like the brands, right? Tough Mudder and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. Which is the one where people died? Like, they got electrocuted or something, or like?
Oh, I think that might be Tough Mudder.
They have like shocker things. Is that also the case in all of them? They all have like weird like shock
things,
barbed wire.
No, I mean, most of them have some kind of aspects that are slightly dangerous. Like in this one, probably the most shocking thing was they made you get into some freezing cold water, right? So I live in New England, and we're just coming into spring. So all the bodies of water are pretty cold, right? So this water was like 44 degrees. in Spartan, they're much more refined obstacle course racing brands. So when they make you get in water, you have to put on a life vest. But here they're like, nope, just get in the water. It's cold. And there's
and no like vest. A lake, or what are we talking about here?
Yeah, like a small pond, like not a lake, but like a small pond. And they're like, here, go swim to the other side. And I'm like, well, I'm not a good swimmer, right?
And you're wearing shoes too. And like,
I'm wearing shoes and like a whole like, you know, vest with my water in and all that stuff. And
wow.
I'm not a proficient swimmer, so I doggy paddled my way across, but I'm like, I'm not really sure about this, right? So it was kind of like, they had like guards around and like people like on kayaks that would come and like get you, but like if you're not a swimmer, like you're probably pretty terrified. And I was kind of scared, even though I got through it. But
there's not to go on a tangent, but those things seem like those kinds of races, or even like trail races, like trail ultras, seem like that aligns much more, I think, with some other part of like my brain. Like, oh, that seems like a fun adventure, you know, go have a time. Like, you know, placing is one thing, but like the time results can be kind of irrelevant, you know. Or not, right? Or you just go and your goal is to finish. Like, I would love to do a 50 miler one day, and just with the goal of like running it under 12 hours.
Right.
Like that's
and I think, like for me, the reason why I like obstacle course racing over say like trail running or just plain trail running or running on the road, is there's two reasons. Right. I think that obstacle course racing, you have an amazing community. There's always people that are out there supporting you, like as you run by people or, you know, if you need help on an obstacle, you see someone struggling, people always help. Right. So there's always this great sense of community. And then the other thing is like the primal, like challenging yourself type of thing. Like you get to some type of obstacle and you're like the water, right? You're somewhat scared to get in there because it's freezing cold and you're not a great swimmer, but you do it anyways and you challenge yourself. So like you said, even if you finish, when you finish, right, you come away with some sense of accomplishment, even though you didn't, maybe you didn't, you know, come in first or qualify or whatever, right? Maybe didn't have the best time, but you challenge yourself in some way and you finish that and you overcame that challenge throughout the
race. That seems like and also just like moving your body in different ways and I think an ideal, I mean, again, this is we're not even into the actual substance yet of what we're talking about here, but I think like one of the really cool parts of that and just like all the things that are out there in general, it's like, to unless you're like an elite athlete, to be so narrowly focused. Like, I mean, I do have like this marathon goal and I want to do Boston. I would love to do Boston every year. Cause like just go to school in Boston. It's a very personally meaningful race in a lot of ways. Even though I haven't officially run it. I did sneak in college, but, there's so many things you could do. It's kind of amazing to when you hear about the obstacle course racing stuff or you talk to trail runners or you talk to like, you know, like people who do the CrossFit, regional things and all these different ways of just kind of getting out there and finding interesting communities to be part of and dip in and out of. There really aren't enough like training hours in the day, just kind of,
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Like almost like a year per thing, maybe you could probably do.
Yeah.
At a reasonably high level. I mean, high amateur level, but anyway, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned your interest in marathoning, but first let's kind of tell everyone a little bit about yourself. You have an incredibly interesting job. That's something that's completely opposite from what I do. So give us a little bit of your background, what you do for a day job, and what's your sport of choice?
So I'll start with sport of choice. My sport of choice is marathon running because I went to school in Boston and lived on the marathon course for my final 2 years of college on Beacon Street, sort of right about like maybe a half mile from Kenmore. So like mile 24 ish, I guess. Yeah, just fell entirely in love with the whole idea of it. I mean, the city just like shuts down, you know, for the entire weekend. It's all about the marathon. It's all about sort of supporting the runners and, you know, it's kind of like, I didn't know what a marathon was before I went to school, college that is. You know, I asked the same questions that everyone else asked. Oh, how long's a marathon? How far is it? You know, oh, is the same distance for every marathon? Or how do you get into this marathon? And, but in a way, having my first experience with a marathon being the Boston Marathon, it's kind of like you're in driver's ed and you're driving a Ferrari. Like, you don't know how good how could you have it almost for your first experience because you have no context. And then when I came out to California in 2008, I joined a running club and then really got super, super into it. I finished college in 06. So had like a 2 year gap where I was like probably jogging a little bit, but I did sneak into the Boston Marathon in college because back then they didn't really care if you did it. So that was the other thing too, like running it and like seeing a big city marathon and Boston of all the big city marathons was so impactful and so profound. And then I came out here and got into running and tried, you know, which is kind of how the health journey began too, but maybe getting ahead of myself. The answer to your second question, my jobs, I write for TV and I've been doing that since 2009 sort of a, you know, variety of ways one, I guess, makes money in this career. So part of my job, probably the biggest part of my career, so to speak, is getting hired to write on other people's shows, OPSs, I guess we could call it, if you want to use some slang. that isn't real slang. Like you have a show that's going to be, you know, on Netflix and you need to hire 10 writers. And so maybe you hire me to write for your show. And more recently, I've been sort of hired at the level of sort of like the person who's in charge of the writer's room. So, you know, maybe the showrunner is kind of off like doing production stuff, and then they would kind of communicate their desires to me, and then I would kind of be in charge of hopefully organizing the writers in some fashion around that general creative task for the day.
Have there been any shows that we might have heard of that you've
maybe? I don't write on like big shows. I write on a lot of like weird animated things. It's kind of like my little niche, I guess. My first job ever was on this show called Ugly Americans on Comedy Central. I've written on a couple of their shows now at this point. Was writing on this show called Trip Tank, also on Comedy Central, which is sort of like a weird like animation digest kind of show. Wrote for the show called Brickleberry, also on Comedy Central, and then a handful of shows on like Disney and Cartoon Network, kind of a mix of like adult animation, like super, you know, kind of vulgar, you know, aggressive stuff. And then stuff like for families and kids, like for about 3.5 years, like before my last job, I worked at DreamWorks, working on a Puss in Boots show, sort of like from the Shrek movies. That was really fun. And also like a really sweet, like enjoyable show to work on. And then more recently I just finished, the first season of, I'm not sure how old you are. We're probably about the same age roughly. There's an Animaniacs reboot, when we were kids. Like, so we're bringing, they were doing that for Hulu. And that'll be on in 2020, I think. So, it's a weird thing. Cause like, it's a very, like in some ways a very public profession. Like everyone has a TV pretty much, or like a computer to watch streaming things on. And like it's a weird thing often because like you meet someone and they ask you like what you do and you're like, oh, I do this or that, and then they go, oh, anything I know, and then you're like, maybe I don't know, like what's your social security number, you tell me that, what's your address, and then I'm like, and so my common answer these days is just like, they ask me, oh, anything I know, I'm like, no, probably not, I write like creepy weird stuff for creepy weirdos.
Simple.
Yeah, which is also probably the truth of it all because there's so many shows now. And then the other way I would make money in this career, or that other writers make money, is I sell pilots, so things that literally no one has heard of because they've never gotten made, just bought and paid for, which is really what I consider my like actual job. But you really can only, it's like saying, oh, I'm a hockey player, my real job is to shoot, you know, like take shots on goal, but mostly what I do is skate around on the ice. Like that's kind of the way I compare. Like skating around the ice is like taking jobs on everyone else's shows, and then shots on goal are really like selling your own stuff because you can only really pitch like one or three things a year, and maybe you sell one of them, and maybe if you sell a bunch of things, eventually maybe one goes to series, which is kind of like the ultimate goal. And then I'm also getting into film hopefully this year with some, you know, screenplay stuff, and which is a whole other kind of modality. So yeah, it's a very entrepreneurial career, I guess, which is not dissimilar from, I think, what a lot of people in the Nourish, Balance, Thrive world seem to be doing professionally, kind of their own little thing in one way or the other. But it has, I guess, the added benefit of having some structure, because when you're on someone else's show, at least like you have a job for, you know, we go to an office every day and you're like, there is a built-in structure. Although marathoning actually has really, I think, prepared me very well for a freelance lifestyle, because like a marathon is just like long-term scheduling, as a lot of endurance sports are. Like, yeah, you have my next race isn't until December. I'll do probably a half marathon tune-up race in October or something, but like my goal race is December 8th. So, you know, it's like such a long, long vision of like what when the goal is. So all you can really do is just do today really well, and figuring out like what are the, like how many little steps can you break each day into. I talked to Simon Marshall recently about, well, marathoning, but also just like life in general. And he had this really good analogy of like a chessboard. And so if there's 64 squares in the chessboard, like fill each of those little squares with like one thing that contributes to your overall success in racing. So it isn't just putting in the miles, but it's also like maybe it's sleep, going to bed at 9 PM every night, or, you know, and like these very binary goals, like, you know, eating enough, like did you do all the little things? Because that way, like, it gives you more ways, I think, to kind of pursue the goal, but also not get too fixated on like any one thing, like, oh, my run sucked today, It's like, well, that's fine. Like, there's still 63 other squares on the board.
Right. There's so much more to athletics than just the training aspect of it, right?
Yeah. Which takes you a while to kind of learn in some ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's something that both you and I have come to appreciate more and more as we've worked with health coaches and talked to other people. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the things you do outside of training probably make just as or even more of an impact on your performance while training or racing than anything else, right?
Oh yeah.
You can miss, you know, a few days of training and still go out the, you know, on the weekend and run a nice race. But if you sleep like crap for 7 days in a row before the race, like, well, you're probably going to be pretty bad on racing, right?
Yeah. Which is my nightmare. I'm like, oh no. What if I didn't sleep well? Like today, yesterday I work from home a lot right now in between shows. So I'm just working from home on stuff. And so I have the nice benefit of being able to like take naps whenever I want, which is awesome. Mm. I love taking naps. And, yesterday I took a nap. I slept okay, but probably didn't eat enough on the day before. So like I was a little bit tired in the morning. So I took a nap at like 1 p.m. And then also at like 7:30 p.m. I like laid down to read for a little while on my little like futon thing with my dog. And like fell asleep until like 9. And then like went to bed at 9:30. So like I slept like between my actual sleep and then naps like 9 hours.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And,
because
it was just great. Oh, I felt so much run.
I can't nap. Like I'm not a napper. Like unless really? I'm sick. Like, if I'm sick, wow. I can nap. But you know, I can't just lay down in the middle of the day
really?
And go to sleep.
Yeah, you feel I have, like there's like things to do or what is
yeah,
it?
I have a yeah, my I need to like in order for me to get to bed and like have a really good night's sleep, like mm-hmm. I need to be really mindful about like shutting my day down, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm one of those people that has so many things on their minds and like that will just mm-hmm. keep on going up until I go to bed. And then when I get in bed, I won't be able to shut down and go to sleep. Uh-huh. So I need to make a conscious effort before I go to sleep to like shut my brain down and do something like just calming, in order to get a really good night's sleep. And like in the middle of the day, my brain is so wired.
I hear you.
From doing whatever that I can't fall asleep. Like it would take me an hour just to like wind down. And then maybe fall asleep, right?
And then it's like 4 p.m. and you have kids too that are going to come back at some point to the house. And that's a weird thing. I mean, I try to think about it, and I'm in a very, I think, unique situation in some ways. Cause I don't have, I mean, not unique, but I don't have kids. I have a small dog, but he's in his teepee right now, sleeping where he'll be most of the day. Also, my job is like you're always waiting on other people in my career, so like. To a certain extent, I could be like, I have kind of one task every day. So right now, like my goal for today is just like get through maybe whatever page XYZ for this feature I'm working on. It's kind of, the rewrite that I'm doing on it. Which has been a very like long 2-year process of like learning how to write features and, you know, kind of learning how to like become a better writer in order to do the thing I'm trying to do. But also, you know, I'm waiting for my agents to like find the next job offer for me and my managers to get back to me on the write up for like the next show I want to pitch. And, so ultimately like there's this trap that I can fall into occasionally that I think maybe this scales to every profession. It's like, oh, if I just keep busy all day, I've been effective. But I think for me, it's like, I've realized over the years, I'm like, oh, also I could like sleep 2 hours a night and like, be typing away and writing ideas down and journaling and, you know, editing and rewriting and whatever. But like, ultimately there's only so much that I can really do to advance the cause. So it is kind of like a marathon in that regard. Like I really can only do one run a day. And me, you know, going crazy with like foam rolling and all the other, like, you know, spending every other minute doing that stuff probably isn't going to be effective beyond a certain point. Also I'm very lazy. I'm just like, oh yeah, I don't want to. I'll do my writing in the morning, and then I'm like, well, it's noon somewhere. It's time to call it a day until, you know, the next. And like ultimately, if this feature is done like a month after it could be done, like or a month later than it could be done, like I don't really care because then it's gonna go, you know, off to someone else, and they're gonna read it on their leisure and get back to us whenever they want to get back. So I don't know. I feel like what a world it would be if like everyone had like just could like chill out a little more, you know.
Yeah,
part of the Nourish Balanced Diet, and they're always like Zach, my sort of main health coach and strength coach through the program, is always like, just relax more. Like you're it's part of the problem with like all athletes, right? Like we're all type A and like overachievers in some regard.
I think there's a bias.
Just relax. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a bias to like, especially the people who, you know, I think a lot of people who seek out health coaching are, whether it's Nourish Balance Thrive or something else, they're almost all type A people. Like, I think I noticed it. They take like a really active and like mindful, they want to be at their best, in all areas of life, whether it's athletics or just, you know, family life or work or whatever. Right. So they're seeking out help to do that. And I feel like that just kind of lends itself to that type A personality, right? Because I have the same thing, right? So, and people have told me, dude, like, you just need to relax. Like, you just need to sit down and do something mindless and watch TV for 30 minutes, right?
Well, the other thing that I always think a lot about is
something like to do.
I think what it is mostly, it comes from like, even when it's well-intentioned, I think part of it's like our brain looking for a distraction. I heard some quote recently that I forget who said it, but it was like most of the world's problems stem from like, you know, humans not being able to sit still in a room by themselves, basically. Like, hey, what if we did invade that other country? Or hey, what's that guy got? I'm gonna go like, you know, murder his village, and you know, all the problems are like, that guy has a different thought than me. I'm gonna force. It's like, just if everyone could just, you know, relax and like not need constantly. I don't have a TV in my apartment. I have like a computer that I can watch streaming things on and all that, but I'm always very like aware, like a mindfulness standpoint of like, you know, why am I reaching for my phone? Like, why am I putting a show on? Because I actually want to watch something, or because I'm just like, some part of my brain is like, oh, like I'm bored, entertain me. And I try to be really mindful about all that stuff too. Like, let's not have, because also like, you know, you do your really good thinking when you're just kind of like a little bored and kind of like just staring at the wall. And having a dog's good for that too. Cause like, I'll just go over and play with him sometimes, or, you know, just be laying down, like petting him or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, like, he isn't looking for a distraction. Like, he's just hanging out, you know, like, why can't I, you know? So,
but what too. Like, the mindfulness thing, I think, is really important. It's something that I, you know, some aspects I've made a lot of leaps and bounds in improving that myself, certainly when it comes to stress. Like, I can realize that I'm getting stressed out, and really, you know, that I know that this thing that's stressing me out probably isn't that important, right? And that I can just calm down about it. It will resolve itself or work itself out, or I'll get done at some other point, right? And it's not a life or death situation, and I can just calm down about it. And like, I can see myself getting worked up and then calm myself down now. But there's certain things like you said, like if I reach for my phone, like, why am I reaching for my phone? Like, I still don't question that. I just automatically do it, right? So there's different, that's something that I like to improve in myself around my more mindfulness in other aspects of my life, just besides stress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I've never really checked it, but that function on the iPhone, like screen time, I use a different thing to check that, but I think you have a thing like how many like pickups you do a day, like how many, which I don't know how you actually access that. But that seems like a very illuminating, you know, I mean, it's kind of like what you can't measure, you can't, you know, make progress on, you can't change. So even having like, I have an app on my phone called Moments, and it sort of like just measures like how much screen time you have. And if I can keep it to like under an hour a day, and, you know, not all of it's just like wasted time. A lot of it is like, you know, maybe like read the news, or I'll use that instead of turning my computer on to like do email or whatever. But above that, you're like, you know, if it goes above an hour, I'm like, yeah, I guarantee you like most of that was just wasted dumb time. And I get rid of all of the, like, you know, social media apps and all that.
Yeah, you're much better than I am.
Well, also, like, I have my own business. I'm not like, yeah, you know, I think if I was like a physical therapist or a health coach, I need to be on that. But even still, like, there's a way to engage. Like, I go on Facebook occasionally because I'm in a bunch of like running groups and discussion groups on that, kind of like the Nourish Balance Thrive forum, but just for running and stuff. And like the, you know, Primal Endurance one, they have a forum on that too. And couple of other like health based things. And so it's great. Like if you have questions, and I think it's really a matter of like, you know, anybody who's like, oh, you know, the phone or the internet, whatever, is the devil. It's like, well, it's just a tool, right? And however you use the tool, you know, there's good uses and bad. Like a hammer is a great tool, but if you're using it to like, you know, you know, smash your fingers for no reason, it's a really bad use of that tool. But if you're using it to like build a house for your family, it's a great use of the tool. And so
yeah, and like, I'm reading a book, Digital Minimalism.
I just bought that actually. Yeah. How is it?
Cal Newport. I shouldn't say it's reading. I'm reading it because I'm listening to it on Audible. So, but yeah, it's so far so good, right? And he has a whole like 30-day detox period where you like eliminate most of, you know, all the non-essential stuff from your life. And then after that 30-day period, you start reintroducing things, kind of like an elimination diet. Like think of like how you eliminate certain, you know, things from your diet, and then you reintroduce them one by one to see how you react to them, right? So then you start adding in certain pieces of technology back into your life that you think might be have some use, but you put like parameters around it, right? I'm only going to check, you know, Twitter once a week on Saturdays or something like that, or, you know,
that's cool.
You kind of reset your digital stimulus by doing that 30-day detox, and then you kind of realize, you know, oh, maybe these things aren't really that important, or I have so much more time to, you know, read books or play with my kids, or you know, take up some new hobby that, you know, was just not possible because I was spending so much time in these digital, you know, social media things, right?
Well, I've heard also that when you're trying to like make change, like change habits, like it's important to like don't just like get rid of, like replace it with something else. So whenever you feel like the impulse, right, to like if you're, you know, have a drink or, you know, check your phone or whatever other like addictive behavior you're trying to get rid of, it's like, okay, replace that. So if you're check your phone, like do like 20 squats instead, you know, and like just like change the mind's focus a little bit, and like or something else that's pleasing, but also not like, oh, I'm going to read a magazine article, you know, or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of it sounds so obvious too. You know, it's like, oh, I felt better when I was reading a review of that digital minimalism book in the New Yorker. And the woman was like, oh, like I felt so much better. And I'm like, yeah, like, of course you did. Cause you weren't just like staring at a dumb thing. People look amazing to me. It's like, I have a pretty strict, like no phone when I'm like, well, certainly driving, but when I'm like walking rule, you know, cause I walk my dog a lot. And, you know, I'm always amazed when people are like, oh yeah, like I tried, you know, in this whole digital minimalism, you know, vibe, like, oh yeah, I stopped, you know, having my phone with me when I was walking my dog. I'm like, what were you like looking at Twitter while you're like walking your dog? Like, just like, it's like for most people, it's like the twice a day they're going to be outside for like 20 minutes. And so like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I feel like the whole thing is really just paying attention more, you know, like being very deliberate about how you spend your attention and being able to really decide like, oh, and whatever I'm doing, I'm going to really focus on that thing and just engage with that thing very fully. Like there almost seems to be like no downside to paying more attention to the things you're actually spending your life doing versus like, oh yeah, I'm kind of like doing this, but kind of halfway doing this thing too. But anyway, I mean, it's easy to be on your high horse about it, I guess, but ultimately you just want everyone to like be thriving and like enjoying their life and not just like staring at this like horrible little device all day.
Yeah. And I think it ties back to, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've come to realize, I think on our health journeys together. Right. So, why don't you tell us a little bit how you ended up working with Nourish Balance Thrive and why you ended up seeking out some form of health coaching to begin with?
Sure. Well, the simple answer is just that I was getting really into running and, you know, kind of initially was going down like the injury cycles that everyone kind of ends up on at some point with endurance training, if they're not like one of the really like lucky thoroughbreds that just like out the gate are like amazing runners. So I was getting really into just things like mobility WOD, you know, early on, you know, in my running career, so to speak, which
already puts you like heads and tails above
maybe
everyone
so,
else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm very, also, I think a very logical person as well. So like when you start discovering, oh, like there's a reason that like your posterior, your, you know, tibialis tends to be the thing that gets injured, and you start looking at like foot mechanics and like, you know, and that puts you more in thinking about like the concept of like barefoot running or like, or just restoring functionality to the foot and ankle. And like, well, how do you how do you get more functionality in the ankle? And that puts you on this whole thing about, well, can you get into the bottom of the squat position? And then you're thinking more about your whole body as a moving, you know, machine, or, you know, in different systems within systems, as Kelly Surratt calls it. And then that puts you really not even thinking about running anymore. Now you're just thinking about like the body as a moving health organism, and like, oh, like why? Oh, interesting. And then I heard Phil Maffetone on Trail Runner Nation, probably in 2013, I want to say, somewhere in that ballpark. And that just kind of like blew my mind. And also they had an episode with this woman, Sunny Blunday, who was talking about like becoming a better fat burner. And these were not concepts that I was ever aware of. I was like kind of an accidental vegetarian at the time, just not even out of like any moral or even like educated standpoint. I was just like, ah, meat's too hard to cook. I'm just going to eat like quinoa and
beans. Just pure laziness.
Yeah. Again, so lazy. So I started getting more into that stuff. And then once you get into the Maffetone thing and, you know, you're just kind of like, you go, why would I do it? This person's telling me there's a better way to do this thing and a healthier way to do this thing. And some of the results also, like on the Maffetone thing, like, can be pretty startling. Like, I have one friend, more of an acquaintance, I suppose. This guy that I know, Flores, who has a really good website called The Extra Mileist, and also a YouTube channel that goes along with it, where he interviews people like Marco Cuzzella and et cetera. But he went from like, you know, like a mediocre marathoner, like 4 hour range marathoner. Sorry if you're listening to this and that's what you run, but that is mediocre. To like 240s, I think. And he was a very good math responder. Like, he seems to be just one of those sort of injury free people who can put in the mileage. He just does like all the low heart rate stuff and, had great success. And just hearing his story was really kind of inspiring and exciting to think, oh, like this is a really cool and like seemingly like non impactful way to train. So then I heard from there, then you get into like some podcasts, like at the time, Ben Greenfield was kind of my entry point into like the general health space tied into performance, you know, in that same kind of context of like Maffetone, like healthier ways of training. And then I heard Chris Kelly on Ben Greenfield's podcast. I'm trying to like draw all the little like points of connection here. So then I heard Chris Kelly on Ben's podcast talking about the organic acids test. From there, I heard him on Tony Prazek's podcast, Endurance Planet. And then at a certain point, I was like, oh, I should just see what it's all about. And then, of course, I did like an organic acids test with Chris Kelly and Nourish Balance Thrive back in 2015, I think, 14 ballpark was when I started working with them. And of course, there's like a million things that need fixing. And then, you know, again, I think every time you learn something new or some other context for the narrow focus you have, like your like kind of your lens or perspective on the purpose of your training kind of gets wider and wider. And then to the point where it's like, okay, like marathoning is like the least of my concerns. Like, how do I, you know, start, you know, setting myself up for like healthy aging and, you know.
So did you, before you, did you have any like health symptoms or anything that you thought like, oh, I have this problem, and I need some help, and that's why you turned to like health coaching?
Or I mean, just
pure curiosity for like better performance and better, you know, health overall that you ended up down this path?
Yeah, it was more the latter, I think. I mean, I'm sure I had like, I can recall being like when I first started working with Chris Kelly, like red meat would make me very gassy. And I probably couldn't, whatever that was all about. Like, there are definitely like gut dysfunction things going on. You know, I'd taken a lot of antibiotics as a kid, I'm sure, and all that stuff. But it wasn't like, oh, like, I don't know why I have no energy, I'm so fatigued all the time. Like, it wasn't really in that context, which I feel like is the other bucket of people who come into the health, like, coaching space. For me, it was just like pure curiosity and just kind of like being interested in like, oh, this is all very interesting. I wonder like what my health status actually is. I think I'm healthy, but like the sort of metric for health back then is like, you know, if you can picture like a just a very generic corporate office. And like, there's the one like triathlon guy who's like maybe a little over fat, but like everyone's like, oh, that's Steve. He's the triathlon guy. He's super healthy. And you're like, maybe he is. Like, if your only metric right. is like, 'cause he runs triathlons, probably not healthy, you know, what's his A1C? What's his CRP? Like, you know? So, and then also I'm always, like, I think I've been a bit of a contrarian always. And like something about the conventional health model is never quite like sat well with me. Like just like the way things get like vilified in the media or like, you know, like low fat or whatever. I'm like, I don't think this is like, these don't seem like very smart people saying this. Like, I wonder what the, and then you begin, of course, listening to like other podcasts on the health, like, space, and now it's like so huge. Like Rhonda Patrick has a podcast. Like, it's just all these amazing people with great information to share. To the point where it's almost like I wonder if in like 50 years if this is even going to be like med school anymore. Or you know, like I mean, it will be, of course. But I mean, because I'm not going to be like doing brain surgery tomorrow. But like, you really can. I mean, we'll put it this way: there all these podcasts and all these forums and things that we have access to now, they're basically like providing a user's manual for the body that we didn't have before. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, we all have cars, and are we going to be the ones like pulling the engine out and fixing it? Like maybe, maybe not, but like we all can like do basic maintenance on our cars. And I feel like it's like irresponsible to basically be a person who's alive in 2019 and not know like pretty intimately, like what your general health status is and how you can improve it. And a lot of it is such low hanging fruit that it seems just like careless. Like why not, if you're not going to take the time to like work on sleep, you know, eating generally a paleo-ish kind of approach, you know, ancestral whole food, whatever, right. Walk more, all those things, then you may as well start smoking too. 'Cause like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah. I was actually, it's funny you bring that up, because I was actually like, I was reading this book, the other day, and they had they were talking about like the My Plate, right? We used to have the food pyramid, uh-huh. and now it has this My Plate, right? And I'm looking at the My Plate and I'm like, actually, if people ate what this said, right? Okay, it includes grains, and some people have, you know, an aversion to grains. But assuming they were grains, dairy, vegetables,
that'd be great. Meat,
right? I mean, if you just ate that, like you'd be a million times better, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
There's all kinds of criticism about the My Plate, but in reality, if you just ate those foods, most people would be fine. Right.
Yeah, it's funny. I just went to the little like interactive thing on My Plate, and it's like grains. It's like turning like bread and like mac and cheese and popcorn.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah, yeah.
But even still, if that was like your 80-20, that was the 20, like fine.
But like, so the grains is a very wide category, right?
Yes.
It includes things like mac and cheese. Right. You were like talking about like quinoa and corn and rice. Like, if you stuck to like ancient grains, like, you know, old school. And not like processed garbage,
sprouted, probably, and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, you'd probably be fine, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you'd probably actually know if you were just eating those foods. Like, you'd probably be able to tell whether your grains were okay with you or not, right? And then just take them out. Uh-huh. Right? But the fact that you eat all the rest of this garbage that's under grains or dairy or whatever, right?
What was funny too, I heard Ben House on the Nourish, Balance, Thrive podcast, and he was kind of making the joke of like, look, unless you're like sleeping well, eating whole foods, like don't talk to me about like intermittent fasting and all of like it's like next level, like 1%. I mean, like it's easy enough to like not eat for 12 hours, but you know, his point was well taken though, of like, look, unless you're gonna like be just cleaning up all of this like basic stuff, don't worry about like red light therapy, because like it doesn't matter. It is information that they show dairy in this. I wonder if because of like dairy subsidies, you know, like US farming, right? Like,
definitely
have the thing we pay farmers to make for sure. Definitely include that in this weird small circle. I guess it's a cup or a weird.
Yeah, I also noticed like fats is completely absent from that picture.
Right,
but that's it,
right.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'm saying like if you generally stuck to like a somewhat healthy version of that, you would be okay.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's totally true. I mean, if everyone just like, I mean, the recommendations are so low. What was it like? I mean, even in Tommy's talk about Tommy Woods talk about what was it? Sort of like fueling for a, you know, an ancestral approach to endurance sport. And he was saying like, they consider like vigorous exercise. Maybe it was the podcast on performance versus longevity, but whatever it was, they were kind of defining vigorous exercise as like anything over 100 steps per minute, which is really just like a fast walk. And only like 5 hours a week or something like that, 7 hours. It's something like really, really low. So if you only walk like, you know, 45 minutes a day, that's kind of like the threshold of like, do that, and you could probably, and my sister and brother-in-law actually are optometrists in Northern California, and a lot of their patient population has diabetes where they are. Mm-hmm. And they're also into the kind of ancestral health model of everything. And so often they really have actually gotten people to make significant lifestyle changes in their population that they see over there at their clinic. But often it's just like, oh yeah, some guy comes back in and gets like stoked on this whole, like, you know, whole foods kind of approach. And oh, I'm walking a half hour or a mile a day now. And then their A1C goes from like 10 to like 5.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
In like,
yeah, it's amazing. Like simple things like that.
Yeah.
Can make such a huge impact. Like getting outside and walking in the sun. Yeah. Right. I mean,
I know
not only like there's like a million benefits to that, right? Your sunlight, the vitamin D, the fact that you're moving around, you're spending time in nature, right? If you have a dog or you're talking to someone while you're walking.
Well, that's a lot of it too. Like having a dog also, like you get to meet all the other dog owners in the neighborhood. And like, so any given walk might take me anywhere from a half hour to an hour, based on like who I run into in my neighborhood. And like, oh, it's like, it's my dog's buddy, so-and-so. And like, and the owner that I'll talk to while we're walking our dogs together, just kind of like this happy accident. So yeah, like just being outside is probably better than just being inside in general. Yeah. The rule of thumb.
Yeah. So there's like very simple things that everyone can do regardless of who you are, whether you're an elite athlete or, you know, Joe Schmo who sits on the couch all day. Like it doesn't really matter if you're not doing these very essential things like eating healthy, eat whole foods, get outside and move, social connection, sleep and stress. Like, you know, like you said, don't bother with the stupid red light therapy.
Right? Yeah. And in fact, actually, I would argue like if you don't have any like performance goals, you're probably in a better position to be healthy, frankly.
Yeah.
Because like, I guarantee you like my marathon goals that are like kind of defining the rest of my year are getting in the way of me making better health advances in other categories. For sure. Now I can do the marathon training like in a very like, you know, like 80-20 kind of math approach kind of way. Just I like math a lot. I haven't seen the best progress with it, so I'm actually gonna, once I get into my 18-week cycle, I'm gonna do more like, you know, the weekly tempo and threshold stuff, and you know, just like keep it again 80-20, you know, kind of range. But I mean, look, if you were just like, if you didn't have any goals of like sport or like outcome, like walk an hour a day or as much as possible and be at your standing work desk and, you know, walk 2 hours a day for, you know, if you want, eat well, sleep a bunch, train in the gym, like squat, deadlift, front squat stuff, you know, three days a week, 4 days a week. And then sleep a bunch and like, and then maybe like once a week, like find a hill and do 10, like 10 second sprints or play Frisbee with your friends or like whatever, right? Play basketball.
Yep.
Where you're just gonna run a little bit and have some fun. But if you said those things, like you'd be, like you could just be the healthiest person on the planet. Versus like us idiots who are like, you know, well, got to do a 90-minute run today and like 90 minutes tomorrow, probably like 2 hours on Saturday. You know, like, I'm like, no one's telling you. I actually went to ask Chris Kelly. I was like, hey, like, do you have any endurance coaches at Nourish Balance Thrive? And he's like, no, but our logic is that while strength training is key for your health, endurance training is not. And our goal is to get everyone healthy. How, what they do with that health is their business, kind of. But we're not here to do the endurance training side of it because like, our goal is health. And so,
right. So talk to me more about this. Cause I know this is something that you've thought a lot about, the conundrum of endurance training and how it relates to health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's, well, initially I was just like all in on running. And then like last May I took a break from any kind of endurance training because I had gotten injured over the winter, like while running back home in Jersey in the snow, and kind of pulled like a, just like tweaked my hip flexor just enough where it was like not fun to run at all. And I kind of like muddled through it and was seeing like a, you know, like ART guy and did my weekly, like, you know, just getting like bruised up with his getting like, I'm like, what? And then at a certain point, I'm like, I felt like an insane person. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, eventually it's like, oh, okay, I got a splint on my leg and oh, if I just kind of like hop on the other leg, I can do a marathon. It's like, no, just don't do this thing, you idiot. You know, and so took a break, talked to Zach over at Nourish Balance Thrive, Zach Moore, their strength coach, and was like, hey, like I just want to do like a strength plan. And I got real, I mean, I've always enjoyed lifting, I've always enjoyed like kettlebell stuff and all those kinds of things, but never like just like devoted myself purely to that. And so I just, from that point on, for the rest of 2018, just was like lifting in the gym 3 days a week. Really had to like learn to like do the lifts properly. I mean, deadlifts, like, had a pretty good form, but, like, squat, I hired a squat coach who, like, trains locally and here in LA, and just kind of, like, wanted to, like, get all that figured out, which is fun. Like, learning, just, like, sucking at things was really fun. Like, oh, I don't know anything about this. Like, I want to learn, you know, how to get good at this stuff. And it was so much, such an enjoyable thing. I didn't have to, like, eat all day and, like, you know, I mean, constantly, like, with marathon training, you just need so much food. I really just, like, I don't dislike eating, but I just find it so, like, 2 meals a day is perfect. It's like, I have breakfast.
Yeah, you get to the point where you're, like, you get to the point where you're like, I completely sympathize, because when I was doing my ultra, it was like, I was planning my day around how I could get in enough calories to right.
And I'm so, again, I'm so,
and it gets old after a while. It's just old.
It's, yeah. And I'm so lazy, as I mentioned, that I'm like, ugh, I live alone too. So I'm like, ugh, I just, like, cook chicken or something or steak. And I'm like, or if I didn't go to the store, I'm like, I don't know, man, where is food? I don't have any idea what to do anymore. You know? So it was so nice just, like, doing the strength training and got so into it, made really good gains. You know, and then, like, once the end of the year came, I was like, all right, cool. I was doing some, like, small jogs and, like, my Luna sandals or, like, Vibrams, just, like, fun, functional half hour, kind of, like, barefoot things, which was also really fun from a running standpoint, because, like, there's no goal. Like, oh, cool, it's like jog for, like, a half hour, and then if it's 10-minute pace or 11-minute pace or 9-minute pace, who cares, you know? So, got super into it, and the first time really was just, like, thinking about optimizing health and had time just to, like, do that. I was doing, like, more FRC training, which is, like, a mobility kind of training protocol. That was really fun, and just, like, didn't have to spend 8 hours a week running. I mean, I say have to. It's a very, you know, it's a choice. It's not like I was being forced to, and it's a privilege to have a choice to, like, go run a fun race. You know, I get that. But so then when I came back into, like, all right, I still want to run Boston, I still have these marathon goals, I still do like running. But having had the strength training just, like, for whatever, you know, 7 months of last year, and then continuing, I'm still doing strength training 2 days a week in the gym. Deadlifts and squats are the kind of the focus. Working on still my goals with that. Like, I want to get to, like, 1.5 body weight on the squat, 2x on the deadlift, which I'm pretty close on the deadlift actually, but still pretty far from the squat. And so when it comes to running, then you're sort of like, okay, well, I felt like really good just lifting. I was sleeping really, really well. And the goal was just like, yeah, like, just be healthy and feel good. And now that the goal is kind of like this particular time goal with, you know, getting into Boston, I think it really makes you question, in a good way probably, like, do you really want to do this goal? Is it still a thing you really care about? And for me, the answer is yes. Even though it isn't always, like, readily apparent, like, every run, like, I've had some really bad runs the past, like, you know, a few months getting back into running, kind of, where I just wasn't eating enough probably and wasn't sleeping well. And I was like, oh, every run feels terrible. So it did make me kind of think, all right, if by, like, July, I'm not, like, feeling good consistently for, like, most of the runs, I should really, like, reconsider either the way I'm going about this, like, maybe math, just scrap it and just, like, do more speed work. Or just, like, scrap the goal entirely and just, like, go back to, like, some jogging and, like, most lifting. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of square that circle in some ways, because you know that, like, marathon training is not, while it isn't necessarily bad for you, it isn't good for you. Aside from, and I had a friend make the argument recently, actually, that she was like, well, but, like, the joy you get, like, she loves running. And she's like, yes, the joy I get from running these races and training, like, does impact my health positively. Which my thought on that is kind of like, well, yes, but joy isn't exclusively a byproduct of running. Like, you could sing in a choir and get the same joy, presumably, or, you know, whatever you love to do. So that's not really an argument that I think holds much water, but if it does apply to you, then it's true.
And I think I took a similar approach where I decided that over, you know, especially the winter time here in New Hampshire, it's not very fun. Like you said, you hurt yourself running outside in the snow, right? It's not very fun to run outside in the snow or in freezing cold temperatures here anyways. So I was like, I made a conscious effort to, like, spend a good portion of my winter and off season doing mostly strength training with some The only cardio I was really doing was walking. You know, I'm an avid walker. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get on the treadmill every couple days and just put it, I wouldn't even run. I would put it at an incline. Like I have an incline treadmill, so it goes up to like 40%. So, you know, I put it at an incline to the point where 40? My heart rate would get up. Yeah, it goes
all
the way.
Is that unique?
I would not do that. I can't sustain that.
Is that a unique treadmill that can go 40 degrees?
Yeah. It's a incline. It's a Nordic Track incline treadmill, right? Which is, I have it because I, you know, actually when I race my OCR racing, I really prefer to do it on a mountain, mm-hmm. right? So not having to drive to a mountain is, and just go in my basement and set the incline to, you know, some ridiculous number is somewhat convenient for me. But anyways, that's what I would do is I would, you know, I'd spend 20 to 30 minutes just at an incline, you know, at like something like 20%, get my heart rate up to like math and just go for 20 minutes. And then the rest of the time I was lifting.
That's nice.
And it's a lot. Spending that time just focusing on strength was a good break for me totally. As well. Like I didn't really have towards the, you know, when the weather started getting nice, I had some urge to go outside and like hit the trails, right? Because of being stuck inside in the winter, you just want to go outside mm-hmm. and I associate that with trail running. But, you know, spending my focus and my energy on like, you know, perfecting form or just moving my numbers up and like seeing the strength gains come mm-hmm. Across the months was just like eye opening. It was a good break for me.
Yeah. And you like, to be honest, changes your body. You're like, oh, like I feel good. I'm strong.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I feel like I can, you know, there's a lot of strength aspects to obstacle course racing, but most of it's just body weight related. So as long as you can move your body weight, you're pretty much okay. But like to go beyond that, to deadlift, you know, 250 to 300 pounds, or to squat your body weight or whatever, right? It just makes you feel like, you know, it's not that impressive compared to some people, but for an endurance athlete, I think it's pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
I think most endurance athletes can't do that.
And I gotta say, I really enjoy having like a butt for the first time in my life. I'm like, oh, I actually have like a posterior chain. Like my pants don't, like I get new pants, you know, because my legs are bigger. I'm like, this is great. I'm actually
I was rock climbing with some people I know the other day at an indoor gym, and I got down from the wall, and one of the girls is like, you have really nice calves. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't have calves. And then like, she showed me a picture and I was like, oh, actually I do have some muscle in my calf now.
Yeah. Some real strength. Yeah. It's funny. And, so I think part of the thing is like then having that balance, right? So now like having this real enjoyment, cause like just doing strength for me, like also I felt like it increased like just like slight anxiety levels a little bit. You're just like, you know, you're like, I don't know, human growth hormone doubt or something. So the balance of like a little running, a little strength work. I mean, I do like, and it is like today I did like a 80-minute run, just like a nice big loop out to the ocean and back on two different roads kind of coming and going. And it was great. It was so fun. I got to like, you know, you just interact with the world in a fun way. And I do more road running than trail running because just like I said before, I'm just lazy. But I do hike a lot. We have the Santa Monica Mountains right here, like 10 minutes away. And so I'll bring my dog up there on the weekends, like in the evening, especially like kind of like an hour before sunset, and like he can go meet some other dogs and we can climb some steep hills and, you know, get some views of the ocean and the city. But I think like as long as there's that balance, I think then it's probably fine. Like doing one marathon a year, like if it's what you really want to do, that's fine. And there are experiences that you can only have doing a marathon or doing a trail race or an obstacle race. Like there is not a replacement for the things that we like. So I think it's really more about like incorporating it into the same way math like tries to incorporate health into a marathon training cycle. I think it's important to try to incorporate a marathon cycle into a healthy life, as opposed to just saying, well, I'm not going to do that because it isn't like absolutely improving my like longevity and health span. Cause that's when you get into the weird, like, I don't know.
I think they're here.
You know, it's like, are you like a person or is it like a weird, like Mercola, when I hear him talk, I'm like, is there any joy in your life? Or are you just like sleeping in like an ice coffin, like, you know, Nosferatu, and then like, oh, you know, I remember him once like scolding Ben Greenfield on the podcast for like, because Ben's like, oh, I have my RO filter at home. And he's like, oh, yeah, but if you don't have, like, this kind, it's like $80 million, then yours is surely contaminated. And I'm like, look, dude, like, we live in the world. Like, this is a polluted, disgusting, toxic world. Like, you know, there's going to be – you could be hit by a bus. Like, there's going to be, like, things, and you're going to die one day anyway. Like, I get you want, like, health span, longevity. But when I hear him talk, I just, like, laugh to myself. I'm like, this person's a maniac. This is, like, an insane – He bragged recently on one of the podcasts. That's a go on a Mercola thing, but he was like, "Oh yeah, well, I'm not married, so I can just like go and like do my grounding like walks on the beach and like you know like be all like about health." I'm like, "Yeah, it sounds great. Like being like a weird like creepy dude who like is bragging about being alone in the world because like his health is so like optimized." I'm like, "That sounds terrible." Like him and
the one thing we do not want to do is take all joy out of life, right?
Because you really can get that down that road, and with the community stuff especially, right? That's the one thing that kind of has been talked about a lot on the podcast, the forums, you know, with a lot of different people. Like everyone's like so focused on the, you know, the performance goals or health goals and whatever else, but at the end of the day it's like, oh, and I haven't been to a dinner with a group of friends in like a year because like it's too late at night and there's industrial seed oils and you know but again, you can't do it all. Right. You can't like be trying to sleep well and being out late at night, and like you do have to choose at a certain point. Hopefully you can find a group of friends or a social scene that kind of like supports that versus like, well, I only do heroin at like the rock and roll club at like on Saturdays. By the way, that's how like lame I am. I'm like the rock and roll club, you know, where the kids go.
Yeah, no, I think it really is all about balance, right? I mean, you know, like you said, whether it's balance in the type of training you're doing, right? There's something to be said about, you know, having that aerobic ability to go out and do a run, right? You know, the other, you can look at it the opposite way, or someone who's a bodybuilder and is completely afraid of doing cardio at all, right? Because they don't want to lose muscle, you know, from, you know, doing aerobic work, right? You can go the other extreme as well. Right. And that's not good either. Right. There's probably some health detrimental problems with going to that extreme around the strength training aspect of it too. Right. So we're getting up close to an hour and I have to go bring my lovely daughter to her dance class, which is always such a fun time for a dad to do. but one final question for you, Greg, before I let you go, what's the one thing you would suggest to someone that they could do to improve their health?
I would say be curious, probably, you know, like be curious about all the things that, you encounter, I guess, right? From a health standpoint, like don't just take your current kind of situation as a given, like go, oh, like, I wonder why is sleep important? And then like learn about these things. So just like it's like having someone tell you what to do doesn't really do anything for you probably. But like if you're curious enough to like seek out information and it's so easy to right now that I think like if you listen to a podcast on like, you know, someone talking about the importance of sleep, for instance, or, you know, blood sugar regulation or what any other, I mean, which may not be very interesting to most people, but like, there probably is a better, like, just getting started on that journey, I think, is the goal, right? It's not like how far optimized you take it. It's more just like make one change and see how you feel, right? Like go out and walk more, start somewhere. So maybe I'll be great. Start somewhere, just start, right? Awesome. Yeah. Once you get on that path, you're probably not going to get off it. As we know.
That's a great answer. We're all still here years later. Yeah,
exactly.
And if you are interested on the importance of sleep, I highly suggest you read the book Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, which is like completely eye opening
and very alarming. List of stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to get Alzheimer's.
It's like study after study after study of why sleep is so important, and you'll have a new appreciation for sleep after you read that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But that said, Greg, I'd like to thank you for giving me an hour of your time. I'll let you get back to your nap or whatever you're going to do. So.
Probably should do some writing today. Thanks for the chat. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Take care. Talk to you soon.